afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. I'm Elodie Cederstrom, and you're listening to Financial Survival. And I'm here with my co-host, Dave Allen, to bring you our opinion and commentary on today's economic and political events. Today is Friday, February 9th, 2018. Good afternoon, Dave.
Happy Friday, Melody.
Happy Friday, TGIF. And boy, oh boy, what a roller coaster of a week, an emotional ride on the markets. I don't know about anybody else, but I'm tired this week. You know, it takes a lot out of you, particularly when you follow these markets, and I certainly do, way into the wee hours of the morning. And so I don't get a lot of sleep when the markets are this active. And I saw a cartoon, Dave, because everybody talks about this roller coaster ride, and it shows this, you know, the old wooden roller coaster, and it has the little car as it's going up and down, and then they show the very end, and of course, instead of going down the last big dip on the roller coaster, it actually just flies off into the it crashes. So you know, it's,
yes,
so it's not sure if you saw, have you seen that one?
I have not seen that one, but certainly an appropriate metaphor for what's going on out there in the real world.
Yeah, it certainly is. And although we don't have to, well, gold's not going crashing or anything like that, but we did have another pullback in today's market in gold. We are looking at gold at $13.14, down almost $5 today. Only a third. Yeah, not much, not big in percentage wise, but down just about $5 at $1,314. Silver was down 13 cents today, $16.37. Platinum was down $10 at $965, but palladium decided to move higher, up 14, almost 1.5% at $976. The USDX today is trading slightly stronger, 0.14 at 90.43. Crude oil got hit today, down 2.11 at 59.04. And the Dow, we don't have the final numbers, but it looks like it's up 332 points, at 24,192. I think earlier in the day we saw a 300-point drop, so a huge, huge swing to the downside, to the upside, and all over the place. The NASDAQ was up almost 100 points, also at 1.44% at 6,874. The S&P was up 38 points at 2,619. The 10-year yield, 2.83%, down 0.02, so a little softness there. And I think they're going to try and soften that 10-year yield to bring the markets back up, but we're going to be talking about that here later on in the program. The euro was 1.22, down 0.24. Japan and Hong Kong were down huge overnight. Japan down 2.33%. Hong Kong was down over 3%. London and Germany were both down overnight. And the Fear and Greed Index, it's the lowest that I've seen it, down 8 to the number 8, for 1 to 100, and we're looking at 8. So there's still fear, but very little panic. There's still no panic in these markets, or you would see gold up significantly. So little panic, a lot of fear. And Dave, it's kind of like, you know, when the Weather Channel tells you that a hurricane is coming, but you still have 3 days to prepare. You have a little bit of fear because, your town is sort of on the, where the hurricane is going to make landfall. So you have fear as you're preparing to shutter up your windows and so forth. But you really only begin to panic once it hits the land close to your house, and it's kind of the same thing. I don't know if that's a good way of looking at things, but it kind of made sense earlier today when I thought about it, and so we have yet to see that panic.
Maybe we'll have to start a new segment on Financial Survival, Melody. Maybe call it something like Financial Tsunami Watch.
Yes.
We can turn the watch into warnings and talk about fear, panic, and loathing.
you know, pretty much like the you know, Weather Channel certainly does. So the schizophrenia continues. The market schizophrenia continues, Dave. The S&P 500 officially fell into, you know, in Wall Street terms, correction territory yesterday. It's down more than 10% from its record that was reached in January. Here's what happened since last Friday when the market correction began. The day before Thursday, the S&P stood at 2822, down from its all-time high of 2878 on January 26th. On Friday, it fell 60 points or 2%. On Monday, it fell another 4%. On Tuesday, it rose 46%.
Points.
Oh, I'm sorry, 46 points, or 2%. Wednesday, it fell 13 points, or a half a percent. It fell 3% yesterday. And finally today, after starting the day up, as I mentioned, it is trading higher from yesterday. So it's been, like I said, a very volatile week. And we're going to continue our discussion today on market volatility during the second segment. And for now, Dave, is what we're seeing just, you know, your thoughts on what we're seeing is just a run-of-the-mill correction, or does it represent something out of the ordinary?
Well, Melody, I don't know the answer to that, and neither do the so-called experts, because they're all over the map at this point. They say things are happening so intensely and so quickly, just no one can say. What I can say, however, with some degree of certainty, is if what's happening is similar to what usually happens in a stock market correction, then by those standards, we're looking at another 4 months of, or I should say, in paper market investors are looking at another 4 months of pain, at least as far as history goes. You know, if the losses deepen into a bear market, that is, if the market goes down 20%, then history shows it could be as long as 22 months, or perhaps as short as 22 months before they get to revisit the highs that were seen in late January. The average bull market correction, so to speak, is 13% over 4 months and takes just about 4 months to recover. The average decline in a bear market is 30%. Now, there's also a rebellion going on in the bond market that now threatens to take 10-year yields above 3% much faster than expected just a few weeks ago. As a result, as we've been saying, this bumpy ride for stocks could continue for a long time. Now, as we've been telling listeners, some powerful forces are at work here, Melody. Global growth, strong central banks moving to tighten policy, and the U.S. government's deficit spending creating more and more treasury supply. So the bond market has entered a zone of no return for now, where treasuries are expected to price in higher yields in this global sea change for bonds that are all but upon us. Thursday, sharp sell-off in stocks reversed a sharp move higher in bond yields as buyers sought safety, although not yet to gold. The 10-year yield closed at 2.83 from a high of 2.88 earlier in the day, and the rising yields had started the stock market spiral lower. I believe the 10-year yield stood two-tenths. Was it two-tenths or two-one-hundredths of a percent higher as it ended this afternoon? Melody?
Yeah, you're right about one thing. All these so-called experts are all over the page, and of course they're all doing, you know, the mainstream medias are doing all kinds of damage control in order to, you know, keep these markets. And, you know, I don't even remember that during the going into the Great Recession of 2008 and the markets pulling back to, I don't ever remember having these large of swings during the pullbacks. I mean, certainly there was days that were up, days that were down, but I don't remember 750-point swings in a day.
We'll
now,
take a look
the markets,
at that.
The markets weren't 26,000 then either.
Correct.
You know, so we certainly have some bigger numbers to play with. So even when they talk about, we've never been to these numbers where, you know, we look at, you know, the markets, you know, what they consider corrections and so forth. You know, is there an different impact when we gotten to the point of where we're at in these paper markets based on hope, optimism, government stimulus, central bank stimulus? I don't know if these numbers and what we can expect will play out the same as we have seen in the past.
I think it's largely just a game of managing expectations, and now expectations are relative to the times we're in. You know, in some respects it's the same, but in a lot, things are different now than they were just a couple of years ago.
I don't know why. I saw another cartoon today, because I read a lot on the internet. I go to all these different websites and so forth, you know, that I think are good. And I saw this picture, and it was a picture of a casino. The wall was lined with slots, and there was Janet Yellen.
playing
the slot machines in her retirement, you know, and the stock and the slot machines were listed, the U.S. economy, the stock markets of Wall Street. And she's sitting there playing the slot machine.
Oh, she did the best she could under the circumstances she was handed.
But I thought it was kind of funny, and I thought maybe I'd post that one in the newsletter this week, because it was because we often talk, you know, we always relate the stock markets to the casinos and so forth. Well, last night, here's something also that really irritated me, that the spending bill passed both houses of Congress in the wee hours in the morning, of course, and anything that has to get done in the wee hours in the morning, you know, it's not good for your benefit, our benefit. It was 700 pages. They received in 24 hours. They had to vote on it. Nobody read it. You know, so we're only given the talking points, various captions of how it will affect, you know, the budget caps come off, and, you know, and it's just the only one who made any type of a speech was Rand Paul. Even all your conservative old Tea Partiers and so forth, it's an election year, and it's just... it's shameful and it's disgusting. So President did sign the bill, and calls for a higher than expected spending cap of $300 billion. On one hand, Dave, I guess the fact that the deal was bipartisan probably means the debt ceiling won't be an issue in a few weeks. No, that was included in that deal.
As it turns out, it was.
Yeah, it was included in that deal. And they don't want to talk about it. And I think when there's something that they don't want to talk about it, then I think it shows what really is affecting these markets. The deal had a negative impact on the bond market and has resulted in forecasts of more Treasury supply and higher $1 trillion deficits. We're going to continue talking more about the spending bill and the brief government shutdown. Yeah, the government was shut down for, what, an hour last night, a couple of hours?
Technically, I think 9 until Trump signed the bill.
So while all the people of the country were sleeping, they were there protecting us, right?
Yes. I mean, it shows that fiscal austerity in D.C. is a thing of the past, Melody. Both parties showing little concern for the overall trajectory of the deficit and our debt, which will soon be it'll pass $22 billion sooner than we think, and onward and upward past 23, and who said to infinity and beyond?
I just want to know, and I'm not, I can't imagine what the headlines and what people will be talking about, you know, when this administration increases our debt by $10 trillion and $15 trillion. I mean, those are projections that I've heard from both sides in 8 years, that we're going to see anywhere from $5, $10 to $15 trillion added on to our debt.
Yeah, I mean, it's certainly not only is it not out of the question. I mean, it's got to be likely. Even under current law, we're looking at 4 to 5 trillion, and there's still 7 more years left for the administration. Well, 3 to 7. Who knows what's going to happen in 2020? But take it out that far. There's a lot more harm to be done. Let's put it that way. In some ways, you're thinking, keep your hands off. And that's why, in many ways, I'm a big advocate of a 2 year, normally, I mean, in theory, of a 2 year budget. But then again, it all depends on what's in that 2 year budget. And here we see, that they just can't contain themselves. These caps that have been in place for several years now, to get the votes. I mean, these are the times we live in a divided Congress. Things like this are going to happen. So not only did the caps come off, but now, this 2 year budget is going to increase spending beyond where it otherwise would have by $300 billion. So,
Or more, or more,
terrific.
a lot more. But anyway,
So,
we'll find out. But
yeah, I mean, the 10-year Treasury continues to be the one metric to watch, while people are, still many of them targeted rates under 3% for this year. They're now saying the risk is to the upside, with yields potentially climbing to 3.25%. And I think many of them are being conservative at that level. As we've been telling listeners, the 10 years, the benchmark best known to investors, and its yield influences a number of different loans, particularly home mortgages, credit card interest rates, and other major consumer and commercial loans. Strategists say the level of the yield's not so much the problem, rather how fast it's been moving. That's proven unnerving for global stock markets. And now, Melody, we're in a vicious cycle. If treasury yields go up, you have to sell stocks. And if you sell stocks, they crash. Yields come back down. And, the bond market struggle to price in higher interest rates has been knocked around each time the stock market reacts and sells off. So strategists expect the two markets to ultimately find a balance, but not without more sharp swings. I mean, it's another day of hold on to your pants. So, the question for investors now is how high do yields go? Remember the 10-year started the year at about 2.4%. Now it's up 16, 17% or so in less than two months. And rising yields challenge equity prices and make investors reassess stock valuations. We all know that this tends to be normally is good for gold prices. I think what it means is buy now to lock into terrific prices on our coins, our bullion.
And we're going to be talking about that here in just a little bit, but first we're going to head into some commercials, and we'll be back right after just a few short minutes. So please stay with us.
Since the beginning of the United States, kings have sought it, nations have fought for it. It has been traded, borrowed, purchased, and stolen. There is a reason for it. To secure the blessings of liberty to ourselves and our posterity, invest with the security of gold and silver. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading at 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Listen to Financial Survival with your host, Melody Cederstrom, on Shortwave Radio. Visit DiscountGoldAndSilverTrading.net or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. For the very best in gold and silver trading, call toll-free 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Call now.
Melody Cederstrom and CSE Talk Radio team up as Common Sense Voices of Integrity. I personally endorse Melody Cederstrom to be your trusted go-to expert for all your precious metal needs. Experts agree a financial crisis and even collapse is inevitable. Given our government's lack of economic leadership and self-interests of those in power, it's no longer a question of if you should purchase gold and silver, but if you will purchase gold and silver before it's too late. Melody encourages you to tune in each weekday morning. Visit CSE Talk Radio.com. We both agree truth and education are the two significant factors in both our missions. There is a wealth of misinformation out there. Let Melody and Beth Ann help you sort through the chaos and bring you home to the truths that will ensure that you and your family are protected. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading 1-800-375-4188 or online at dgscoins.com. Melody and Beth Ann are strong forces together working to preserve liberty and bring America home.
And welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, as we return to Financial Survival. I'm Melody Cederstrom, and I'm here with Dave Allen. And gold today, again, pressure on gold today, and going into the break, we were talking about gold, and everyone expects gold to have a knee-jerk reaction when the markets drop, but there's lots of explanations as we wait for gold to regain the attention that it deserves in these volatile markets, and eventually gold prices do go up, Dave. We haven't seen an increase in gold, at least not anyway, since these corrections began to take place last week. In fact, since last Thursday, when gold stood at $1,344 an ounce, it actually fell about $30 or 2% to the $1,314 that we're seeing today. It's had a good year, though. I mean, and I do want to plug gold this way. Since they did the rate increase in December, gold has outperformed your major indexes. So, I mean, gold is still outperforming a lot of items out there. You know, if we go back to the first of the year, if we go back to this December, since she raised the interest rates a 0.25%. So gold's not doing bad, even though we're having these pullbacks, but we expect it to do a lot more at this point in time.
Who's the she you're referring to? That now infamous slot machine lady?
The lonely lady
in the casino.
Yes.
You raise an excellent point, Melody. I mean, gold and silver investors just have to be patient. Persistent, but patient. The other day, George Milling Stanley, he works for State Street Advisors, he explained the reason that gold is not increasing as we think it would be, given the downturn in the stock market. Many investors, paper investors, are facing margin calls. So rather than sell stocks that are now at depressed prices to pay off what they borrowed initially to buy more stocks with, they've been turning to the safe haven asset, the one asset that comes in handy when other things go down, gold. You know, so they're selling gold to make their margin calls. But here's the thing to remember, folks. Every time when stocks go down like the past week, gold also tends to go down for a week to 10 days for similar reasons. That is, these margin calls and other factors. Gold does its job, however, as a safe haven, so people will buy it back, and that will force the price up. In short, Melody, gold's doing what it's supposed to do. We know that virtually any time is a good time to buy gold and silver. If you're a close market follower and you tend to buy gold and silver based on their, you know, the intraday and day-to-day prices, what does the price of gold's movement over the past week tell you? Yes, now's the time to buy it before it shoots back up.
Absolutely. We do have those little packages with a 1/10 ounce American Gold Eagle, the 1/10 ounce American Gold Eagles. You'll receive one of those and 20 of the 1 ounce American Silver Eagles. It includes your shipping costs, and that little package is $560. That includes all your shipping costs. And if you purchase more than one of those packages, I'll adjust it. So we adjust it for the additional shipping charges in there. So give us a call at 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. It's a great little package, $20 gold pieces. I'm going to be talking more about those next week. And a lot of good values out there at this point in time. Now's the time to get it. And I want to encourage folks to visit our website at dgscoins.com. dgscoins.com. Make sure you sign up for our weekly newsletter. And, of course, you can listen to these radio programs archived there on a daily and long-term basis. Also, with that newsletter, during the week, we also send out little flyers by email to keep you updated on what's going on in the market and the coin prices and so forth. So make sure that it's more than just the Monday newsletter. So again, give us a call at 1-800-375-4188. At the end of Wednesday's show, we started talking about how market volatility has risen markedly since January 1st, even more so since last summer. High volatility in the stock markets is one of the most important signs, or an importance, not most important, but important signs, that signals a rise in the price of gold and silver. The higher the volatility, the higher gold and silver prices go. The volatility storm that has poured down on the market over the past week could be just getting started if historical trends continue to hold up. The most popular fear gauge on Wall Street is the Chicago Board Options Exchange Volatility Index, and we all know it as the VIX, ranging from 22 to 50 during a zigzag trading on Tuesday before closing at around 30. Yesterday, the VIX closed at 31 after ranging between 24 and 36, and today the VIX is hovering just around 34, and that was right after noon Eastern time today. The historical average of the VIX is about 20, making today's level 348% higher than it was on January 1st. And that was when the index stood at 9.77. It's roughly four times higher than its low of 8.84 last July. In short, Dave, it looks like we're in for a pretty wild ride. And again, I'm picturing the roller coaster. You know, today we're going to be referencing those cartoons, the roller coaster and Janet Yellen at the casino.
Like my mother used to say when going down the first hill of the Great Bear at Hershey Park, woohoo! You know, Melody, regardless of what kind of investor you are, no one can doubt the rising level of uncertainty throughout the world. However, unless you follow the global markets real closely, you may not know as much about market volatility. We talk about it a lot, but what exactly is it, and why should you care? Well, most listeners know that volatility is simply the periodic month-to-month, day-to-day, and yes, millisecond-to-millisecond ups and downs of the market. In a nutshell, most people measure market volatility by the index you just mentioned, the CBOE VIX. The VIX shows investors' expectations of market volatility in the coming 30 days. Technically speaking, the index uses the prices of all put and call options that are on the S&P 500 and then estimates how those prices will change between today's date, the current date, and each option's expiration date. That change marks the level of volatility. Technical, but that's what it is. Generally, an index value that's greater than 30, as it has been particularly the last week, indicates a higher amount of volatility as a result of investor fear and uncertainty about option price changes, thus the fear index, as it's known as. An index value of less than 20 usually signals calmer expectations of the market. Melody?
Gold is not only a steady, excellent value and the safe haven it's always been, it's a lot less volatile than paper markets. And it's been a lot less. I mean, look where we've seen. We have a trading range, and gold has been trading in that range for quite a while, ever since, you know, it hit its high back in 2011. And that's okay. You have the CBOE's Gold Volatility Index, known as GVZ, is about one-third the current volatility of the stock market. The GVZ, say that three times
fast.
Yeah,
we'll have to think of a name
for that. I dare you.
The GVZ
measures the market's expectations of 30-day volatility in gold prices by applying the VIX mythology to the Spider Gold Shares ETFs, which primarily holds gold bullion. That's what they say anyway. They're never audited, but true story, right? As of around 12 noon today, the GVZ was at 14.95, and that's up 28% from its January 1st level, but is still way below the VIX level of 34. In fact, the highest the GVZ has been over the past year is 17.44 last September. That's compared to the VIX's highest point of 50 this past Tuesday. So, Dave, even though we have a good idea of some of the specific factors that's led to this past week's increase in the volatility, the VIX volatility, this kind of market behavior doesn't usually happen at this time of the year, does it? Or is there a particular time of the year where it should happen?
Well, yeah, you're right, Melody. I mean, this kind of behavior in February isn't consistent with the market patterns that we've seen over the past few decades. DataTrek research follows this a lot, and they found that the VIX has only peaked once in February since its 1990 inception. U.S. equity market volatility is deeply informed by seasonality. Most of the other peaks have been concentrated around August and October, which have 36% of the annual highs. Adding January brings that total to 50%. Now, in 2018, that trend's particularly notable because of the November midterm elections. Republicans will be fighting to fend off what looks to be a formidable challenge from Democrats, who are looking to capitalize on a different type of volatility, the political type. So hold on to your pants, Melody. It's going to be a crazy ride.
You know, there was reports from that the exchange-traded funds and notes that bet against market volatility got schlacked, and that trading was halted for some of them, and even have liquidated some. Can you tell us a little bit about that?
Yeah, you know, we started talking about that on Wednesday. We briefly mentioned the exchange-traded products that bet against volatility, such as the ProShares short VIX short-term futures, and the Velocity Shares Daily Inverse VIX short-term ETN, the exchange-traded notes. They've been getting hammered. Both products use leverage to play against volatility and have raised concerns again this week over the effect that these exotic funds and notes have on market stability. Credit Suisse, in fact, we told you that said the last day of trading for its Velocity Shares fund is going to be February 20th. The bank triggered that liquidation because the product during the last week of volatility couldn't keep up with the scenario it was supposed to track, a calm market. The XIV security, which had fallen about 85% in after-hours trade Monday, resumed trading Tuesday, closing down 93%. The security is supposed to give the opposite return of the VIX. So it's pretty crazy stuff. Other exchange-traded securities that are also supposed to be bets on call markets were halted Tuesday as well after losing the majority of their value overnight.
And, you know, very little attention is given to some of these reports. And you just don't hear it on even on the headlines and so forth at some of these websites and so forth. You don't see it. There was another mutual fund that's in trouble, the Preservation and Growth Fund of LJM Partners. It's a Chicago-based hedge fund. It has about $500 million in assets, collapsed by 82% over the last week, and was also closed to new capital on Wednesday.
Bye-bye.
Yeah. But have you heard that anywhere? No. You don't hear anybody talking about it. All they're talking about is Russia, Russia, Russia. Investors in the industry are calling LJM among the most prominent funds to fall victim to the popular short volume trade. The trade had become profitable for many hedge funds, including LJM, whose preservation, that cracks me up, preservation growth fund.
We call it ironic investing.
But they did post positive returns every year except one since it launched in 2006. Tuesday's client notes signed LJM's founder and chairman Tony Kane said that the portfolio management team has been hedging with as many futures as possible to attempt to insulate portfolios from further losses. He cautioned that their ability to do so depends on market conditions and liquidity. Our goal is to preserve as much capital as possible. Man. You know what? He's not the only one out there. This is not the only fund out there. And I want to ask my listeners, how many of you know what's in your retirement accounts, your pension plans, and your investments that your financial planner has for you? So these are not the only folks that got into trouble. We're just not hearing about them because it's all called damage control.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, that's a good point.
So it sounds like they're in a heap of trouble, Dave.
And yes, it does, Melody.
So getting back to the VIX, the Bank of America Merrill Lynch analyst Suttmeyer reports that a volatility index of 20 and higher is usually associated with a correction, with the S&P correction of between 5 and 20%. And again, that's important to gold and silver because, as we said, a significant rise in volatility goes hand in hand with the rise in the price of gold. And you have to be patient. As we mentioned earlier in the show, not right away, though. There's usually and always a time lag. Since 2017, when the VIX hit a low and then began to rise, the price of gold has risen over $100 per ounce, from around $1,200 to over $1,300 today. Silver has increased about $1 per ounce. So, folks, even if you aren't a good fortune teller, gold and silver have shown to be a profitable investment, especially in times of international turmoil and significant volatility in the U.S. stock market. It is the insurance policy.
Yeah, you're right, Melody. To back up your statement, one recent study shows that over the seven major U.S. market corrections since 1976, that's as measured by drops in the S&P 500, the price of gold has increased an average of 16% compared with the average decline in the S&P of 31%. I think our point here is not to argue that gold is the be-all, end-all investment for everyone at all times, despite the fact that it is for many, many listeners, and rightly so. Rather, it's to say if you don't own any precious metals, now's the time. It's looking like an opportune time to get in and buy gold and silver. And if you already own gold and silver, now's the time to buy more. Melody?
Well, we're about heading into a little break here, so we'll stop here. But folks, there's no better time like the present. And I really don't believe they're going to pull us out of these markets. You just can't continue with the amount of debt. And I can't remember who said, I mentioned it the other day on the program, you know, debt is okay until it isn't anymore. And I think we're at the point where it isn't anymore. They don't want to talk about it. They don't want to tell you the truth about it. And we're going to talk a little bit more about the debt. I just want to bring this in about David Stockman talked about briefly the soaring deficits. And so stay tuned. We'll be right back.
Food prices have increased over 40%. Energy prices have increased over 20%. Wheat and gas prices have increased over 70%. What's going to be next? Do you see these trends reversing or even stabilizing? All fiat currencies have always failed and collapsed their economies on their way down. The Roman Empire, China, France, Argentina, Finland, Mexico, Russia, and Zimbabwe all tried fiat currency and all collapsed into chaos. Meanwhile, the dollar has lost over 97% of its gold gold value since 1971, when an ounce of gold was valued at $35. If your assets are in paper, you are in danger. Protect your assets with gold and silver. Visit Discount Gold and Silver Trading at DGScoins.com. That's DGScoins.com or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 800-375-4188. Protect yourself and your family.
We all know that Berkey Water Purification Systems are the most trusted name in water filtration. As an authorized Berkey dealer for over 6 years and serving thousands of satisfied customers, the Berkey Guy offers amazing specials for Berkey Water Filtration Systems. The Berkey Light Systems include a set of self-sterilizing and recleanable black purification elements that purify water by removing chlorine, pathogenic bacteria, cysts, and parasites to non-detectable levels and remove harmful chemicals such as herbicides and pesticides. Order the Berkey Light System today, complete with two black Berkey elements for only $231, and the Berkey Guy will ship your order free of charge. With the purchase of a Berkey Light, the Berkey Guy is also offering a set of fluoride and arsenic filters for only $39.99. That's over 30% off the retail price. Call the Berkey Guy at 1-877-886-3653. That's 1-877-886-3653. Or order online at GoBerkey.com. That's GoBerkey.com today.
Financial Survival. I'm Melody Cederstrom, and you're listening to Financial Survival. It's been a long week, Dave. And we might even be closing a little early, maybe 10 or 15 minutes early this evening. So if you're going to put in your gold and silver orders, make sure you call prior to 6 o'clock Eastern time. But please, always, if you call afterwards, because these programs are broadcast throughout the night and tomorrow and the weekend, leave a message. I'd be more than happy to call you back. Just make sure you give me a time when to call you back. I don't like to call anyone on Sundays, but if it's okay with you, please leave that little note with your message and what you're looking for so I can make sure that I have prices already, and I'll give you a call over the weekend. So I've always worked 24/7, and I don't plan to stop now. As long as the good Lord is allowing me to do so. So I think we wanted to talk a little bit going back to Congress and Rand Paul. He held up the bill until a little after 1 a.m. But David Stockman, he was the former budget director of Ronald Reagan, and he's been in the news of late. We talked about him on the program before. You brought a lot of his content to previous programs. And Stockman estimated the spending plan is going to boost the deficit over the next 10 years to $15 trillion, pushing the federal debt to more than $35 trillion. This guy's not a dummy. He was the budget director for Ronald Reagan when that debt went up, 120%, 130% at the end of the term. The staggering amount would be more than a third bigger than the annual economic output of the United States. And that's the optimistic scenario from the Committee for a Responsible Budget, a nonpartisan public policy organization in D.C. Normal business cycles inevitably have slowdowns, Stockman says. It assumes that the U.S. goes 219 months through fiscal 2027 without a recession. Now, who believes that? Who believes that we're going to get to 2027 without a recession? He says that's nearly double the longest one in history during the far more than the 90s. The U.S. Treasury will need to raise more than $1 trillion to cover expenses for the fiscal year, just as the Federal Reserve is shrinking its holdings of Treasury debt. That combination alone is going to flood the market with U.S. debt securities. So, again, here you have someone that's been there, done that. And he says when you start marching toward a $2.1 trillion deficit even before factoring in the next recession, and when you recall that today's 60 million Social Security recipients will be 80 million by 2027 due to the massive baby boom retirement wave, you are just plain sunk fiscally, Stockman said. So
who's going to buy all that debt, man? you know, we've already got China, who's talking about cutting back, slowing down its future purchases of treasury. Good Lord. I mean, maybe perhaps under, I'm not even sure, under the wildest of positive economic scenarios across the globe, that what are now emerging markets, you know, become more mainstream with the ability to pick up some of that debt. I mean, I'm talking about those smaller countries and parts of Asia and Africa and South America, but that's so unrealistic. It just doesn't seem sustainable.
There's such a disconnect, and because no one talks about it like we do on this program. You don't hear it any place on mainstream media. So most of the people, they hear these numbers, but I don't think it's not explained to them how they don't connect to it. There's a big disconnect from the reality of what's going on. And it is, and those are the ones who have the retirement accounts. You have the baby boomers. They're sitting there. I know they're sitting there keeping their fingers crossed, hoping that, you know, they're not going to get wiped out 100%. But you know what? If they put a portion, if they put half of their paper investments, if not all of it, into gold and silver, they wouldn't have to worry. What people don't understand is you can always go back in. You can always sell your gold and go back in.
What?
And,
you can?
Yeah. Really? And it's just like, they just don't see it that way. They're so afraid of missing something that they'll risk everything that they work so hard for. And when these people begin to understand that they're losing, and I don't know what the trigger is that's going to make them. I mean, we look at the VIX numbers. We look at the fear and greed index. It's the lowest that I've ever seen at 8. I think yesterday it was lower than 8. But yet they're not doing anything. They're the deer in the headlights. There's no panic because they've been conditioned, thinking that, oh, things will be great again. And but let's ask Senator Rand Paul. He held up the spending bill last night till 1 a.m.,
mm-hmm.
you know, setting off a technical shutdown. The Senate approved the 6-week funding extension and spending limit deal 71 to 28. A couple of hours later, racing the bill through procedures that normally take hours, the House bill was passed 240 to 186, with 67 Republicans and 119 Democrats opposed, and 167 Republicans and 73 Democrats in favor. Of course, Pelosi continued her opposition to the Friday morning, you know, insisting once again that Speaker Paul Ryan give Democrats the same assurances that Majority Leader Mitch McConnell gave Senate Democrats. The Democrats would have a level playing field for offering amendments to help a bill to help the undocumented young children, protection on the deferred on DACA. You know, and I'm not even going to go down that road today, you know, so I'm going to ignore Pelosi's comments, because few of us are fans of Pelosi. You know, she stood 8 hours to support DACA, but during the, we've seen pictures, particularly during the State of the Union address, you know, so anyway, take it away, Dave.
Oh.
Take it away.
What's to say, Melody? I mean, except this legislation's a massive spending bill. I mean, in addition to the 6-week extension of government funding, it would raise spending by roughly $320 billion, providing $80 billion above current spending caps for defense this year, $85 billion more next year, and $63 billion for non-defense spending this year, $68 billion more next year. The agreement also sets up $140 billion in war funding, $20 billion more for other emergency spending over 2 years, $20 billion for infrastructure, which is interesting. I haven't seen the details of what that entails, $7 billion for community health centers, which is one the Democrats really wanted this time around, and $70 billion extra for disaster relief. Earlier reports had said as high as $89 billion. CHIP is now the Children's Health Insurance Program is extended for 10 years rather than 6 under the last continuing resolution. And very interestingly, the debt limit is extended for 1 year. So there will not be a fight over debt probably until fiscal year 2019. Spending-wise, a huge win for the Democrats, although they didn't get the assurances they wanted on DACA. We'll see if that comes together by the March 5th deadline. Which is what lawmakers are saying that action on immigration has to be taken by then, because if it's not passed, then an estimated 1,000 people will start losing protections and being deported each day starting March 6th. We'll see what happens, Melody, as we like to say.
Well, the Republicans kind of lost their leverage, didn't they, by passing the spending bill on immigration? Wasn't that their leverage? You know, you do, or was it the Democrats' leverage that they held?
It was really the Democrats. It's really the Democrats' leverage. Now
they lost anyway.
It gives the Trump and the Republicans an opportunity to, you know, debate immigration as a standalone bill, which is what they've always wanted. I'll stop there, because if we get on to immigration, we're going to be there for the rest of the show, and we'll come back to that when it's on the actual plate of Congress.
Well, you know, the pharmaceutical industry is apparently livid about a surprise change to Medicare drug policy that was slipped into the Senate budget deal. I wonder what other deals were slipped in there that we don't hear about. The bill would close the Medicare Part D donut hole in 2019, a year earlier than previously scheduled, and force drug companies to shoulder most of the cost. Drug companies weren't the only ones taken by surprise. Many lawmakers didn't know this was coming either, Dave. Remind us what the donut hole is, please.
Well, as you said, Melody, you know, most members probably didn't read the 700-page spending bill document. I think what you suggest is going to be prescient. I mean, I think we're going to find a number of little things, not so little things actually, but things near and dear to certain groups of representatives and senators that they'll start finding out more about. In the coming weeks. But to your question, Medicare's donut hole puts seniors and disabled people on the hook for a large chunk of their prescription costs. Under Medicare generally, I forget the numbers now, but let's just say I'm on Medicare, I'm responsible for, say, the first $1,000 in prescription drug expenses, then say the next 20 or Medicare, excuse me, Medicare pays the first 2,500, first 1,000 in drug costs, then the donut hole is for, you know, the next 2,500 in expenses I'm responsible for. And then after that, I don't have to pay anything again. But that donut hole is supposed to go away in 2020 as part of the Affordable Care Act. Beneficiaries pay no more than 25% of brand name drug costs. Health plans would pay 25%, and drug companies would cover the remaining 50% through discount payments. But the Senate bill would end the coverage gap a year earlier, and it would change the ratios. Drug companies be responsible for 70% of the cost instead of 50%, a move that would certainly cost these drug companies billions of dollars. They're not happy.
Can they go back and revisit the issue later? Would they? Could they?
Well, they certainly could. And, you know, knowing how our Congress works, I mean, money speaks, and the pharmaceutical industry, certainly not the only, but they're a big contributor to election campaigns. So, I mean, this scenario just reflects how tough it is to do anything in Congress that, in this case, the pharmaceutical industry doesn't like. But insiders are reporting that, you know, in finding offsets for this budget deal, several drug-related offsets were on the table. And of those, you know, options, this happened to be one of the three that were agreed to by all sides. So the bottom line, Melody, I think drug companies almost certainly lobby to get rid of this new provision, but ultimately it's much more palatable than other ideas floating out there, one of which is the CREATES Act, C-R-E-A-T-E-S Act, which would make it easier for generic drugs to get to the market, drastically cutting big pharma's profits big time.
I just wanted to bring up the nuclear posture review. Last week is the first, the Trump administration released this last week. It's the first time since Obama's 2010, raising some big questions. We've got about a minute left of the program. I don't know how, Marv, can you say anything about that quickly in 1 minute?
Well, we'll go real quickly. We'll finish with the Olympics. There are three questions policy analysts are asking. Number one, how much is enough? This nuclear posture review calls for boosting the U.S. nuclear arsenal of 4,500 operational warheads in response to advances by Russia, China, North Korea, and Iran. Number two, what new options are there? Development of low-yield nuclear weapons is another keystone of this so-called NPR. Number three, when do you use them? NPR suggests the U.S. might use nuclear weapons under extreme circumstances in response to significant non-nuclear strategic attacks like chemical and biological attacks, maybe even cyber attacks. That's it in a nutshell. Bottom line, proposed cost, $1.2 trillion. Probably not funded by taxes or other revenue. We know what that means. Why is this important for gold, silver investors? Because the chances of nuclear weapons being used are the highest they've been since the Cuban Missile Crisis.
Absolutely. Hey, folks, we're all out of time. That's all we have for today's Financial Survival. Thanks again to my co-host, Dave Allen. We'll be back on Monday with some more news about gold, silver, and the market. So until then,
watch the Olympics. Go USA.
Go USA.